today on Anchored in the Word.
You don't have to go there, number one. That's hopeful, isn't it? The fact that there is such a thing, it's good to hear about it, and that you don't have to go there. You can escape that. That's good news. That's uplifting. And, well, how do you escape that? Well, by being a Christian. We're not appointed to wrath, the wrath of God. He's brought that on to eradicate evil. And the only people that are going to be eradicated with that and thrown into the lake of fire are the ones that don't want to do things Jesus' way. They're going to choose the other way, choose the beast.
When I'm anchored deep in your clean love, I'm anchored deep in who you are. I'm anchored deep, holy word. I'm anchored deep.
This is Anchored in the Word, the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Coastlands in Eatontown, New Jersey, with our pastor and teacher, Bill Beckelman. Though the final judgment of the world seems scary and dark, Pastor Bill describes in today's message that there is hope in judgment. Simply, it's our choice whether or not we go through the final judgment. If we choose to follow Christ, we're also choosing to not have to go through fire and brimstone. We've been saved. At the close of Pastor Bill's message, I'll be sharing with you how you can get a copy of today's broadcast of Anchored in the Word. Subscribe to the podcast or simply get in touch with us. Now, here's Pastor Bill with his continuing study entitled Ripe for Judgment.
So he is going to deal with the problem of evil. He's going to eradicate evil. He's got the sickle. Verse 15 says, and another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud. He's talking to Jesus now, this angel, this messenger. He says, thrust your sickle and reap, for the time has come for you to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. A couple of things here. Number one, we get an angel as a messenger. You know, one of the things that Jesus, it's interesting to me, because when he was on earth, he said that, talking to his disciples about the second coming, about when he would come, when will be the, you know, when you coming, Jesus? Give us some inside scoop here. And he told them regarding these things that were future yet. He said, "Is nobody knows. I don't even know. Only the Father knows." I thought that was interesting. You mean, now, here he is. He's in the heavenly scene now. And I'm guaranteeing you that this angel isn't bossing around Jesus. You know, he's not telling Jesus what to do, but more when to do it. Because I believe he's gotten a message from the Father and telling Jesus it's time. Now, obviously, he's at the ready. He's already on the cloud. He's already got the sickle. And it's now time. And he says, and the key word is, he says it's time. He says, it's time for you to reap. Thrust your sickle and reap. He says, and the time has come for you to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. Ripe. Now think about this. He's using this term in a sickle. And I didn't know that a sickle was used for grapevines. I thought you picked them, but apparently this is the picture that's being painted, the grapevine, that idea. But this idea of it being ripe, what is it talking about? It's talking about the evil has run its course. See, we are ripe right now. You could term this message ripe for judgment. There's going to be a time. Think about it. Some of us have lived, you know, over 50 years, and we realize, remember back, you know, you could leave your doors unlocked and you leave your keys in your car, and you didn't worry, you know, for the most part, you didn't worry about being accosted. And when you heard somebody was, you're like, wow, you know, you heard somebody, you know, certain things happen. It's like, wow, that didn't happen very often. Nowadays, we got people, and we never heard about people going in and shooting people up. And you know what I'm saying? The way things are happening now, we're living in a crazy world. Things are seemingly speeding up more and more. More and more crazy things are happening. We're ripe for judgment. We're ripe for judgment. I know 1973 is when they said that abortion is now legal. And I want to say this before I start talking about abortion. I'm going to briefly talk about it. If you've ever had an abortion, it's not the unforgivable sin. And if you haven't repented of that, it is killing, and you need to just ask the Lord to forgive you. And he'll deliver you, because that brings all kinds of horrible things in a person's life to deal with that. And only Christ can really eradicate that evil in a person's life, those thoughts, those guilty feelings. He can wash you and make you, and cleanse you from that. So if you're dealing with thoughts like that because of that, Jesus wants to heal you from that. It's not the unforgivable sin, but it is sin. It is killing. So we've redefined that. The world, the way the world deals with evil, because the world thinks it has to eradicate evil too. It's interesting. You know, they know it's bad. But here's how, this is their answer for eradicating. Well, let's just pretend it doesn't exist. We'll change it. We'll change evil and we'll make it, we'll give it some terminology. We'll make it, you know, it's a choice. It's a choice. It's women's health. You know, you can, oh yeah, that's what it is. Or that's that particular thing, right? But then we can call other things that, by the way, ripe for judgment, Sodom and Gomorrah. They got judged, right? There's a time, there's a timing to it. The angel's saying it's time. And when evil, God allows evil to run its course, and then it gets to a certain point, and he deals with it. And I believe it's always done in love for him. You know, because we've already read his heart. He wants none to perish, right? But he's going to have to judge it eventually, because if he doesn't, I think we'll get wiped out. I think the reason he did the flood when he did it, there were 8 people left. And I personally believe that if he wouldn't have intervened when he did, Noah would have gotten wiped out. Can you imagine 8 righteous people left in the world, what they must have been going up against? You think that that was just like, oh, there's Noah. Look, he's building up. Hi, Noah. How you doing? I guarantee you it wasn't like that. He's a kook. You know, and they probably, you know, he fought against that all the time because he was preaching righteousness in an unrighteous time. Have you tried that? You see how it falls on certain ears? It's not popular. And so God intervened. And he's going to intervene because in that, it says in the fullness of times, when it's ripe, even when the children of Israel went into the land, you know, he gave them the land of Canaan. And God told them, a couple of things. He said, one, I'm not giving you this land because you're so good. I'm giving it to you because the people that are in there, the Canaanites, are so evil. They'd gone so far down the spiral. And you could read the history about those people. He said, the land vomited them out. I'm throwing them out of the land because they're so wicked and evil. And he let the children of Israel go in. But even in that, there was a timing for that. He wouldn't let them into the land because it said that their wickedness had not run its full course yet. God knew where it was going, but in his long suffering, he let that go longer. There's a timing for everything, but there's a time when a person, a culture is ripe for judgment. And if we're not getting close to that as a nation, I don't know where it would be. We're on the downward spiral of man. And the things that we're embracing, the things that we are, you know what I was thinking about? And I don't want to go too far off on this. I got a little bit of time, but there's a religion coming about. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's the government is not supposed to make a religion. Do you understand that? I mean, that's the First Amendment. So that the government, what that says is that the government can't make a religion. That's what happened in England. They were forcing people to worship God their way. It was their way or the highway. And our founder said, we're not doing that. That was the king. He was over us, and that was not good. That will never happen again. It's happening. It's just not called the Church of England. It's secular humanism. But you have to think this through because it's a religion. It's a belief system that is being forced upon us. Think about that. And that's what's happening to us as a nation. But anyway, God's going to deal with it. God's going to deal with innocent blood, he says. He's going to take care of that. He's going to eradicate it all because that's his plan. And he's going to do it through judgment. It's coming. Then another angel, verse 17, came out of the temple, which is in heaven. He also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar who had the power over fire and cried with a loud cry to him who had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in your sharp sickle and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. That idea is going to permeate through this. The fullness of times, the ripe for judgment. You know, it happens in a person's life. And I'm hoping, by the way, that somehow that as God does in his mercy, you know how he pulls the carpet out from underneath? Did he do that with you? He did with me. When I was living my own life and apart from him, and He allowed me to get to a place where I needed God in my life. I realized I'd messed my life up royally. And I couldn't go any farther. I was at the end. I could not go any farther and still live. And lo and behold, I cried out to the God that I'd professed at one time in my life. And that's the hope that he will do in a person's life. And even on the downward spiral as he waits upon man and as he pulls out the carpet, so to speak. And I got to tell you something. I'm not against God doing a revival in our nation. I hope he does. But it's going to happen through hardship. It's going to happen through him pulling the carpet out financially or something like that. But even after that, we need to understand that the judgment is coming of God. Judgment is coming. He uses the term in 18, fully ripe. So the angel thrust his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and threw it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. So this is imagery we're looking at. It's not just a literal thing necessarily, but it's truth. But it's the idea now we're going to see the wrath of God is going to be crushing down on people. Look what it says earlier in 14, back up to 9. Then an angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast and his image, receives his mark on his forehead or his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation." And it talks about he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone. But this idea of the wrath of God. So what we're seeing is we've already had 14 judgments, and there's going to be 7 more poured out in the world now. 7 vile judgments left, starting in verse, we mentioned in 15, and then as we go through 16. So we're in, kind of in the midst of the judgments, but this is a picture now of the whole thing. And God's laying it out here. We get a picture of Jesus, that the winepress of the wrath of God. So the wrath of God is going to be brought down on the people as the way that they used to make wine. They would put grapes in there, and you apply pressure to it, right? You apply a lot of pressure. If you were a grape, it wouldn't feel good. You know, people walking on you and squeezing you, and then, you know, grape juice comes out at that point. But it says that he gathered this, and verse 20 says, "And the wine press was trampled outside the city, and blood came out of the wine press up to the horse's bridle for 1,600 furlongs, and 184 miles. Some people believe this is speaking specifically, and it could be, about the Battle of Armageddon. It's going to take place there in Megiddo. You go to Israel, you hear about that, and you look at this big valley and you think, what would it look like? 184 miles of blood, not grape juice. We're talking about blood. That battle's going to be fought there. The world's going to be coming right there to come against Israel, and Jesus is going to come down, and boom, there's going to be all this blood. Some believe it's talking just about that particular one. Could be. 184 miles of blood, as high as it is to a horse's bridle. That's a lot of blood, a lot of bloodshed. Say, ooh, that's ugly. I don't want to hear any more about the blood. Well, it's important for us to hear that there is such a thing happening. Now, there are some churches that pretend, we don't want to talk about sin. We don't want to talk about judgment, those kinds of things. Let's just give a message so that everybody can leave here feeling uplifted and happy for a while. You know, like you could say, news is so negative. Let's go to church and get a positive, uplifting, put your sunny side up, you know. And, well, there's a lot of people that go to those churches. I'm telling you. They hear a positive message every week. And the word is positive in the fact that it's the truth. And there's hope there. And Jesus is our hope. There's hope for this evil to be put away. There's hope for that. It's going to happen. It's just a question of when. He's going to deal with it. And he's working his plan out right now. And there's a time involved for us. We need to wait. We're going to escape this judgment that is to come. But there is a judgment to come. Now for us, two things. As we look at this again, we're reminded once again, the judgment. You know, there's part of me, I got to be honest with you. There's part of me as I'm reading this, I'm like, Lord, every week we're going to talk about judgment and hell. And I'm thinking, and there's a part of me that would say, well, can we just like go, let me go somewhere else in the Gospels and we'll have a, you know, and I'm thinking, in a sense, that's what my mind, and I know I can't go very far in my mind like that because I'm locked in. I'm going through the Bible, and I'm teaching the stuff as he wants us to talk about it. And there's hope there to be found in all the word, even in judgment. There's hope in judgment. Well, what is it? Well, you don't have to go there, number one. That's hopeful, isn't it? The fact that there is such a thing, it's good to hear about it, and that you don't have to go there. You can escape that. That's good news. That's uplifting. And, well, how do you escape that? Well, by being a Christian. We're not appointed to wrath, the wrath of God. He's brought that on to eradicate evil. And the only people that are going to be eradicated with that and thrown into the lake of the fire are the ones that don't want to do things Jesus' way. They're going to choose the other way. Choose the beast. Choose the sad replacement, the Antichrist instead of Christ. They're going to choose that. And by the way, even though the Antichrist hasn't raised up yet, the people are already choosing that. The spirit of Antichrist is already here. They're choosing that way, the other way. So choose Christ. And if you have, that's great. I'm going to give you a chance if you haven't. If you don't know Jesus as your Savior, I'm going to pray a prayer with you, asking Christ to come into your life. If you want that, if you want to receive Jesus, if you haven't done that yet, I don't want to assume that everybody here is a Christian. But most of you probably already are. You are going to escape the judgment that is to come. But the other side of this thing is, it's healthy for us to know what's coming down the road. It will bring our lives into perspective because, you know, there's a lot of things going, peripheral things going on around us that are seeking to get our focus off of what's important, what's most important in this life. What's most important in this life? I mean, what is the most important thing in the world, if you think about it? I mean, to God, because he's the one that has all the answers. And I would say to you, souls, the souls of men. You know, the things that we look at as important aren't necessarily important to God. But the souls of men, the most important thing, the most precious thing, the most precious commodity, if you will, if I can use that word for that, are the souls of men. They're eternal. You know, we spend so much of our time, you know, wasting our time on things that are going to burn. They're going to rust. They're going to cease to exist. But people, souls, they'll go on forever. Yeah. When we say eradicate evil, just to make it clear, we talked about it last week. There's going to be a separation. There's going to be the evil people that don't want to choose Jesus' way are going to be taken away. But they're not going to be eradicated in the sense they're going to cease to exist because they're souls. They're people. They're humans created in the image of God. But they're rebellious. But God's made a place for the devil and his minions. And those people that want to do evil will all be in one place someday where hell's going to be an evil place, I guess. I mean, everybody's going to be there, a rebel. It says that that's where they're going to go, and they're going to not cease to exist. They're going to have an existence. They're going to have a consciousness, and it's going to go on for all eternity, and we read about that last week. It said, verse 11, and the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night. So let's say you're a Christian. You've got yours. You got your reservations, in a sense, because of, you know, what Jesus did for you and what you received him. But what about everybody else? What about all the other people that are on the planet? You know, that not even that, just let's shrink it down a little bit. What about the people that you work with? What about the people that you go to school with? What about your neighbors? What about your family members, your extended family? I'm a firm believer that you know, God's given us a sphere of influence, each one of us, but that's our ministry. Isn't it true that at times, well, I don't want to wreck the boat, you know, I don't want to say too much because, you know, after all, they might not invite me back to the family reunion or something, you know, or whatever. So that's important. You know, it's important that you don't get invited, that they might look at you funny. You know what I'm saying? It's in perspective. We get a wrong perspective when you think about what's important. What's important to God is the souls of men. That's clear. And that's God's heart. He's not willing that any should perish. And the question is, am I like that? I mean, is that what I'm like? Is that what you're like? Is that what matters to you? Am I willing to go across the street? Am I willing to just to stand up for what's right in a situation? Or am I like, oh, fear of man, what are they going to think of me? You know, what are they going to, you know, do with me? What are they going to say about me when I leave? That's more important, your reputation, more important than the souls of men. Just a word of reminder to us of what's important. We need to know what Jesus is doing. He's doing something. We're heading to this place where there's not going to be any more evil. But what we want to do as we're heading there is we want as many people to go with us as possible. And I got to tell you, it's got to start. It starts with this one thing, not just being guilted into something. We must have the heart of the Lord. His heart is he's not willing that any should perish. And if I ask myself today, is that my heart? Is that my heart really? And I can know it then if I start to investigate what I spend my time, you know, thinking about, praying about, whatever it is. It'll tell me whether I have God's heart or not. And this isn't, oh, he's an evangelist and I don't have the gift of evangelism. Even if you don't have the gift of evangelism, you are to do the work of an evangelist. So, as we end, two things. One, knowing that there's a judgment coming, knowing that these things are true. I think two calls to action. One, if you're not a Christian here today, in other words, if you've never asked Christ to come into your life, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be clear about this. It's not just praying a prayer. It is praying a prayer, but it's more than that. It's a surrendering your life. It's a giving over. It's a letting go of one thing and letting Jesus do something. It's like saying, Lord, I'm finished with doing things my way, and I want to do things your way now. You see that? It's commitment to a new life. Now, he's going to give you the power to live this new life. He's going to show you the way step by step. He's very good about that. But make no mistake, you must let go. You must leave behind the old life. You must turn from that. You can't hold on to that and be a Christian too. John deals with that in his letters. If you say you love God, but you live like this, you're a liar. It's not true. That's saying faith, not saving faith. And so it's important. You need to understand that. That when you pray to receive Christ in your life, you're saying, okay, I'm done with this life, Lord. I want the life you have for me. You see, you're trading one in for the other. You can't keep it. Then let's make a deal. You couldn't keep it. You had to give up and go for that. That's a terrible example, Lord. I'm sorry. But it's like letting go of your life. And I'm thinking, what was so great about it? I mean, you know, you thought it was so great, but you're letting go of that. You got to let go of that to have what he has for you. If you want to gain your life, you got to lose it. You hold on to it, you're going to lose it. You're not going to have it. You think you're going to hold on. No, let go of it. And that's what coming to Christ is.
From Hollywood to the latest top-selling books, the world is abuzz with talk about the end times. Apocalyptic events on the horizon seem to fuel this trend. Our world is so upside down. It's no wonder that people are clamoring for something more, something new. The book of Revelation details these dark and glorious times that are on the horizon. May we hear and see Jesus as we study this book with Pastor Bell. You've been listening to Anchored in the Word, the radio ministry of Pastor Bill Beckelman of Calvary Chapel Coastlands in Eatontown, New Jersey. If today's teaching has ministered to you and you'd like to tell a friend about this message, or you'd like to listen to it again, it's archived at our website. That address is anchoredintheword.com. Perhaps today's message was exactly what you're looking for in a church. If you don't have a home church and you sense God is calling you to walk in obedience to Him, by being a part of the body of believers, please join us for worship Sunday mornings at 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. Pastor Bill also shares in-depth Bible studies every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. For more information, including driving directions, visit anchoredintheword.com. And then follow the link to the Calvary Chapel Coastlands church website. We hope to see you soon. Thanks for listening today. Now please place a marker in your Bibles and make plans to join us again, as Pastor Bill will continue teaching verse by verse through the book of Revelation. It's our heart's desire that you would be moored in sound doctrine and anchored in the Word.